for the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Welcome back to Rated G Radio, everybody. We're going to be joined in just a couple of minutes with my very special guest co-host, Rob Watson. You'll know Rob from his weekly extravaganza called Rated LGBT Radio, and it airs Thursdays. I think he'll tell us that we actually air it on Friday, but I think they record it on Thursday. That's beside the point because it's been too long of a hot minute since we've had a chance to talk to Rob live and in Technicolor, and so I'm super excited to have him back. But just as a quick programming note, if you are a new listener to the show, welcome. We love having you here. Rated G Radio comes to you every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or you can catch us live on iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts. You can favorite us and take us with you wherever you go and listen at your convenience. We've also got some other great shows on the network, more episodic or periodic, but we also have Rebecca Fisk, who joins me as a monthly co-host, and she'll do specials on occasion where she'll take your calls as one of America's top 50 psychics. We're also doing some music programming from Down Under with Mary Lou Monroe Ray out of Brisbane, Australia. We have had some scheduling challenges because, you know, like the rest of the world, we all like to do this crazy thing called pay rent or pay a mortgage and eat in the same month. And oftentimes that requires the J-O-B that we all have to make that happen. So she had a fantastic job for a little bit, and we're going to work out some scheduling. She'll be back shortly. And then, of course, the first Sunday evening of every month, Journey with Stephanie Girard, takes listener calls and brings on a very special guest monthly talking about energetic healing of some kind, and she also takes psychic-related questions. So without further ado, as I love to say, I'd love to welcome my dear friend Rob Watson back to the show. Rob, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, my God. I've had such a day today, Rob. But before we get into all of that, oh, my gosh. Okay, well, okay. First, I want to say hi because I haven't talked to you in a million years. How are you?
I'm good. It's been crazy, but, you know, then when hasn't it been crazy? So,
well, that's true. So
that's a little norm.
Last we talked, you were getting ready to move out of your house so it could be really completely remodeled so you could move back in and then sell it or something crazy like that. What's going on with your housing situation?
That is still the adventure. I am now in my townhouse that I'm renting, and it is two blocks from the beach, which is great, which I guess you know kind of what that's like. Which I love, and I love where I am right now. The house is still, it's sort of like, I don't know if you ever watched those, like, home improvement shows or the Love It or Leave It and those. I mean, I'm kind of living that, you know. It's like, so I've got contractors in the house, and they're refurbing all this stuff so that we can sell it, and then it's always this call of like, well, we hit a snag, and it's like, oh God. So, but I knew that was, you know, I knew this was going to be the adventure. So we're getting through it, you know, one day at a time, and that part's good. And I've been doing a lot of writing, so that that's been rewarding.
So what's been the favorite thing so far that's happened at the house that you can actually see and feel and smell the progress on?
To be honest, I have avoided the whole thing. I packed up the last step from there, and I have not been back.
Wow.
It's kind of a, it's like there's so many levels to it. One is that I'll either go up there and just it'll be like so incredibly impressive that part of me will go, oh my God, why am I out of this place? Why is it not going to be mine? Or, and this is kind of more to the point, they're redoing a lot of it that was the things that you know, I've got memories and, you know, I was in there for 21 years. And, you know, I want it to be a new great place for whoever comes to it next, but I don't necessarily want to go in and kind of go, oh my God, my home is no more, you know, even though that is the case.
I totally get that.
I mean, I'm really enjoying and learning from my decluttering of where I'm in my new space and getting, you know, I'm feeling more at home here and getting really comfortable. And so this is.
So do you think you're going to stay in the townhouse for a period of time then? Or?
Yeah, I've got it. I've got at least a year lease on it. So you know, okay. I can revisit that at that point. But for the foreseeable future. And like I said, I really love the area. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it'll be a place that I want to stay.
Okay. Well, I am excited for you. This is such an adventure. I can't imagine being in a home for 20 plus years and then saying, you know what, I'm going to remodel it and then sell it.
If I was actually in there remodeling, that part would probably be hard to sell it after doing that.
Yeah.
And I know this from the past of having gotten a house ready to sell before, where you do something like we in the old house before we moved up north, we had these kind of wood floors, very, very worn. And before we sold that house, we redid the floors. And redoing the floors was not as expensive as I thought it was going to be, and they looked incredible. And so it was like, oh my God, I could have done this 5 years ago and enjoyed these myself, and mm-hmm. yet I did them for somebody else. So, it's kind of that stuff behind it. But, you know, I really needed the change. So
I've got a question for you. So outside of the fact that this is going to be a great thing for you, when you decided that you were going to, and you probably shared this with me before, but you know, I'm like a dog. I have an attention span of about 6 seconds. So when you decided that you wanted to move out and remodel the house before you sold it, why didn't you just sell it as is versus remodeling it to either what you or your contractor feels is great and then hope that you'll make the money out of it? Is there some type of statistic that shows if you remodel it, even if it's not to quote unquote my taste, it's still worth paying more for versus, you know, just leaving it as is and either do a tear down or a remodel the way that quote unquote I want to do it versus the way the old owner chose to do it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good question and absolutely something I asked. The answer basically is that, you know, the market has, although right now it's a little bit dodgy because the interest rates have gone up, but the demand in the market, housing prices have gone way, way up. But when people buy a house at that level, they do not want to walk into a fixer-upper. They want to walk into a house that is ready to go for them. And
got it.
And so the, you know, I could have tried to do that, but really who I would have sold it to at that point is somebody who went in and totally lowballed it, like extremely so. And then they invested the money and then they resold it at the higher price.
Got it.
It wouldn't have been a real, you know, this is the harder way to do it. But it's the more effective way. The other thing is up in the mountains where I'm at, above Santa Cruz, the houses, in that whole area, you really are not allowed to build a brand new house. It's like it's very, very hard to find the land and to build a brand new house on it. So by refurbing this one, it's pretty much like new. And so when I put it on the market, it should, and there's not a lot of houses on the market, it should have high demand and, you know, really bring a good price. So
how much longer do you have before it's done?
It should be a week from now.
Okay, so not that far.
Not that far. But, you know, it's like it's also where I don't hold my breath just because you never know. I'm kind of keeping my eye off it, and they know kind of what I need, and you know, I'm just sort of having faith that they come through.
Contractors are such a different breed of animal. I had my next door neighbor, Mark and his lovely wife, Kathy. I love them. They're dear people. And they are neighbors that you're either going to love them or hate them. Mark has a tendency to be a little bit more outgoing, and you're either going to find that endearing or annoying as heck. One of the two. It's never in between. But Mark, I just call him the mayor because he officially knows everybody or knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. So if you need something done, and I'm not talking like an AC/DC Back in Black, you know, hit on somebody. We're talking about like home improvements or landscaping, things like that.
Right.
Mark
right.
always has A-plus options and people that are willing to ply their trade. And probably about 6 months ago, he was having some exterior lights put on his house. And I got the bright idea. I said, well, speaking of bright ideas, how about I have the light fixtures replaced and then I'll have another light installed for security and it'll be on a motion detection. It's going to be great. So the guy comes over, gives me a song and dance and says, I can start Friday. This is Wednesday. And I said, great. I'm going to give you $600 cash to start. And then, you know, we'll figure things out. Guess what's not happened in 6 months?
Oh, gee.
And it's not that he just not only took my money and ran, but he also stopped working on Mark's project that he was working on. And because my project was piddly. It was just, you know, $600,
yeah.
Which it's still a lot of money, but I mean, it's $600 compared to the thousands that Mark's putting in for new lighting and a security system and all this other kind of stuff. So this ding-dong contractor who could have had all kinds of business lined up for months now, because I probably would have used him for other stuff. And you know me, if it's a good referral, I'm going to tell everybody. And just, you know, completely is ghosted. And probably about 3 or 4 days ago, Mark goes, hey, Drew's coming over. So why don't you just accidentally show up and bring some Tupperware back? And I said, I don't have Tupperware. He goes, why don't you accidentally show up with some Tupperware? And I said, but Mark, I don't have. Oh, and I go, oh, okay, I got it. You mean like when Drew's there? There you go, Sherlock.
Yeah. Okay, like a plate of cookies, anything.
Like, right. Yeah. So I actually did bake Mark and Kathy a loaf of pumpkin bread and took it over. And Drew just happened to be there when I showed up. You know, it had nothing to do with the fact that Mark texted me saying, he's here. Get over here now. And so Mark said, just play it cool. Don't throttle him and, you know, kill him because that won't ever get anything done. And, you know, I'll talk to him and see what we can do. Anyhow, so I'm not holding my breath, but I'm now expecting some, you know, progress to be happening in the next week or so. And hopefully that will be done. But, you know, contractors are
Did
so...
Did he give you any excuse or...
Oh, I mean, you know, people who just... I have given up on today's youth. Utes! Like in My Cousin Vinny. I've given up on the utes of today. It's just, you know, I had a hangnail and then, you know, I had to get a haircut. And then for 6 months, you couldn't call, you couldn't write, you couldn't have just dropped off the $600 and said, you know what, I don't have time for this right now, but thanks, but no thanks. No, you kept my money, you MF. And spent it, and now we're trying to crawl back, you know, in Mark's good graces, because Mark's got all the connections to wrap up that job so you can get that job paid, which Mark has committed he won't pay him until the guy does my work, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, the same here, and it goes back to just, you know, if you do things right the first time, it's a whole lot easier to do it right the first time, and you don't have to spend hours and weeks and months trying to, you know, make up lies and remember the lie that you told so you can do whatever. I mean, I got a good friend of mine at work, his name's Andy, and Andy loves to go car shopping. And when I, you know, historically, I've always just only dealt with like internet or fleet managers, because you just go in and say, hi, I want a car. And they say, here's your price. And, you know, you're in and out of there in a half an hour. And that's how I've just always bought my cars. But Andy's never had that experience. So about a year ago, I helped him get a truck through the Toyota dealership down here. And I'd bought two vehicles from the guy in the fleet. Super easy experience. Got the car in my lunch hour, still made it back in time for lunch, and had the new car.
Wow.
Great. And no haggling, no nothing. It was just like, here's the numbers. If you like it, there you go. And so that was great. So Andy decides that he wants to go help his dad get a car. So, you know, what a good son Andy is. So he finds this Hyundai dealership here in Huntington Beach and decides he wants to get this particular type of car. And anyhow, long story short, you know how it is. If you deal with a normal salesperson at a car dealership, your life becomes a living hell for weeks and months because, you know, they're just horrible, non-human devil spawn. And so they start playing, oh, well, we can't sell you that car. I know we told you we'd sell you that car, but now we get this other car and then we got a different payment. And, you know, how they try to, you know, it's the smoke and mirrors and let's just, you know, move the ball under the cup and, you know, play the game. And Andy's just like, no, we're going to do it this way. And at the end of the day, Andy got the deal he wanted. But, you know, he spent the entire workday, and I'm not telling that in case anybody at work is listening, which I know you are, but he spent the entire day arguing back and forth with the dealership and the management and all of this, when at the end of the day, the dealer knew they were going to give him the deal. Andy knew that was the deal he was going to get, and they could have left with a happy Yelp review, a great referral, and gone on with their day, earned their commission, had lunch, had dinner, and still had another 6 hours left in their workday. But yet they wanted to sit here and you know, quote unquote, haggle and negotiate and do all this, when it's just like, just give me my freaking car. Anyway,
oh my God.
But from a service provider standpoint, Rob, I mean, I think you've been in the service business for a long time, from writing, insurance, lots of different, you know, opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
And you are so focused on how can I help my client? How can I help my client? I will guarantee you have never had somebody say, you've treated me wrong. I don't feel this is fair. Zero people have ever told you that. I'll guarantee it, because you do it the right way. I don't know. I just don't understand people these days. So Drew, the electrician, who's a piece of crap, excuses a mile long, might put in a new light for me and replace some old fixtures sometime. Yeah.
Now,
so I hope your contractors
young,
are better.
Well, they're a little bit on the young side too. So yeah, the thing that I've got going for me is my realtor, who is kind of, she's acting as the project manager of the whole thing, and her husband is a building inspector. So he's stepping in and he's helping push a lot of this. So I've got extra knowledgeable eyes and ears on it, you know,
that's
overseeing
awesome.
The whole thing. So yeah, so that makes me feel a lot more comfortable. But how old is this guy that you mentioned he was youth?
Oh, probably, late 20s. You know, he's old enough to know better, you know, because he was doing all of this work on the side from his quote-unquote regular job as an electrician or something like that. And apparently that's fallen apart. So it's like, you know, you should have, you know, maybe been a little bit smarter about what a retard you're going to be, or moron. Sorry, I'm using a wrong, non-politically correct language. But, you know, you're a friggin' moron doing this and taking people's money with no intention of really doing anything except keeping it. And now you're coming back with your tail between your legs. So here we go.
No, that's not
anyway,
cool.
Not cool at all. But anyway, so I've got a question for you, Rob. It's been a burning question all day long. So I've got so much I want to ask you about. But what has been your most favorite vacation you've ever taken, and why?
That's tough. Probably one of the best ones was, this is years ago, this is before I lived in Santa Cruz and on the Monterey Bay. But it was, my folks used to get a timeshare in Monterey up here. And when I lived down in your area, I lived down in Long Beach, and we would take, my then partner and I would take the week off, and we would do bed and breakfast hopping. And so we did, you know, we did bed and breakfast in Santa Barbara. Then the next day we did Cambria. The next day after that, we made it up to Monterey. And we did, we stayed in one of the old Victorians in Pacific Grove. And then we stayed in one in Carmel. And then we stayed in a bed and breakfast over in Santa Cruz. And that was my very time actually coming, being in Santa Cruz ever. And little did I know that a few years later, I would actually be living there. But, you know, but that was, it was really cool just that not only being in a bed and breakfast environment, but being in several of them. In this area, one thing about living up here is whenever I go away from here on a trip, when I come back, it's like, it feels like I'm arriving at the tourist destination when I come home. So that's hard. But also, when I was 10 and a half, my family moved to Italy. And for the next 3.5 years, we did a lot of traveling there. And that, there were a lot of trips in that time period that were absolutely phenomenal. So it'd be hard to pick out of those.
In all of your travels, have you ever lost or left something behind and been kicking yourself in the shin for it?
I don't ever remember doing that. I'm a Virgo, so it's, you know, I'm not I'm not prone to doing that. I'm pretty organized. I do not remember ever leaving something behind.
Okay. I'm just curious.
I'm sure I must have at one point or another, but I, you know, yeah. Why, have you ever done that?
You know, I had a camera that got damaged with cherry flavored cough syrup one time, and this is when, you know, you would use like real film in cameras, and I think it was probably like a Canon SureShot when that was the big thing, but this is like the upgraded version that had like the telephoto lens. I was on a trip to, it was my Cancun trip, and I had taken, you know, and of course this is before 9/11, so you could take a 72-ounce bottle of cough syrup if you wanted to, and I took a big one. How this ever opened in my carry-on, I have no idea, Rob.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
an entire, you know, container of NyQuil opens up and gets in and around and on my camera and completely ruins that for me. So that should have been the first clue that that was going to be a disastrous trip. But suffice it to say, that ended up being the start of 48 hours that I will never forget. I tore my ACL, had to be flown home on, I don't want to say emergency plane,
oh
but
God.
I mean, I had to be, oh yeah, it was like a whole thing, you know? So anyway, that was a fun trip for a different time. I don't know. I was having a conversation with somebody and they were like, I remember this one time when I was on this cruise and I left my camera behind because my traveling companion forgot to check and they said they did, but they didn't. And then I wanted to kill him because I could da 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 da. And I thought, well, Rob's vacations, if he's ever left anything behind.
Yeah, no, I've been pretty good about that. And part of it is because I was raised traveling. I mean, we were constantly moving and everything else. And, you know, I just think it's sort of like that sixth sense of we're taking inventory, got everything, da-da-da-da. Like when I watched the movie Home Alone, it's like, it always blows my mind. It's like, this is absolute fiction. How could somebody leave their child home, you know, without knowing that they're there? You know, that was not me. They would never be able to get that movie out of me.
Well, and, you know, you say, how could you ever? And then how many times do we see on the news all the time where people leave kids in a car or they've left them at home?
Oh, my God.
I mean, they have left them at home, you know, type of a thing. I mean, not going on a European or a trip to New York vacation, but you know, to the grocery store, or they've left them at the store or left them at the restaurant. And then, you know, you get all the way home and it's like, well, where's little Jimmy and little Susie? Oh my gosh.
You know, I get that people do that, and they get, you know, they're just so distracted of thing. And I also get that when you have young kids, you literally are all over the place because there are so many moving parts, everything else. I couldn't have done that. It's like, you know, I always, but then I was a little bit more helicopter parent than that. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't even let, I had almost a paranoia about the boys getting hit by a car. So up until the point when they were like 11 or 12, when we walked through a parking lot, I had their hands in mine. You know, it was like, I just, this overprotective mode kick in. So, yeah, I just, I don't know. It's like, you know, I think there's thing when, you know, it's hectic and everything else, and you're driving and your child's asleep in the back of the car, that apparently some parents have just not noticed they were still there and lost sight of where, what was going on at that point. But that, I don't know. I couldn't have done that person.
Well, I congratulate you on raising two successful, fantastically well-adjusted young men who are now, you know, going out into the world and making their own way. So good job, Dad.
They are. One of them is actually headed down your way shortly.
To do what?
On his own.
What?
He's going to some sort of skateboarding convention, not convention, but a big meet down in Southern California. So he and some buddies are driving down there, and his girlfriend is currently down there. She has a band, and they're playing some gigs around the LA area. So he'll be seeing her. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right on.
So they're grown up doing their things.
Makes you have just a little bit of a tear in the eye. Something else.
It's, you know, and this is the way it's always been through their whole lives, though, is that, you know, they hit plateaus where they no longer need you for different things.
Mm-hmm.
And when they need you, it's very confining because, you know, it's like, oh, I can't just go do this because I've got to pick the boys up, or I've got to do this with the boys, I've got to do this for the boys. And then they don't need you anymore. And there is this real separation anxiety when, you know, because it's not like, oh, well, I don't have to do that anymore. It's like, not only do you not have to, you can't. You will not be doing that again. Ever. You're done. It's finished. And that is, like, feels harsh when it happens.
Well, pretty soon they'll be saying, Dad, we need to talk to you. You're going to be a grandpa.
I can't wait.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Because I'll have the grandpa advantage card where I get to spoil the baby and then hand them back to them. And,
okay.
You know, it's like, yeah, no, I'm, yeah, I, it's better them than me. Yeah, but yeah,
okay.
I'm ready.
Okay. Hey, I want to, you posted something on Facebook, I think probably one of the first people I saw today to post about the death of Leslie Jordan, who died today in a car accident. And I wanted to ask you tonight about, maybe, you know, because you used to live down here and were involved in, you know, TV and movies and, you know, fun stuff like that. Do you remember the first celebrity you met and what your impression of them was?
Well, before I answer that, though, I do want to point out, not only did I post that, but in the interim between posting that and now, I wrote an in-depth article for the Los Angeles Blade, which any minute will be published as a tribute to Leslie Jordan. And it's not just a news about him dying, but it's much more in depth as to who he was and what he represents to the LGBTQ community. But let's see, first celebrity. Honestly, the first one I ever saw, I didn't talk to him or whatever, and this is going to totally date me, but when I lived in Italy, and I had to have been about 11 at the time, President Nixon came to visit the base, and we got to go see him at the base. And so I remember that, seeing President Nixon live and in person, which was
wow.
a little bit of a shock because he was a lot smaller than, you know, because, I mean, you always imagine the president to be big, and a lot of times they are, but he wasn't. He was fairly short, and that was like, that was kind of my reaction. I was like, oh, he's kind of little.
He's a tiny guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I was in high school, this is fast forward and going half a world away, I worked at a movie theater in Palm Springs. Springs was the, you know, especially at that time, was the vacation destination for a lot of movie stars. A lot of them had their homes out there and all that. So I had a lot of celebrity run-ins there. And probably one of the first ones there seeing in person was Lucille Ball.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The movie Mame came out, and they did the desert premiere of that at the movie theater. And she and Gary Morton were there, you know, for that premiere.
How
exciting
is that?
And I was serving popcorn.
Wow. I've seen a clip of that movie, but not the full movie. And I don't even remember the context of that, but it was in the last year, 18 months. And it was interesting because it was such a moment of not I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
And I think just so many of us, that's the only
movie.
Thing that
yeah.
we could think of.
It was sort of, I mean, I like it and I like seeing it again. Lucy did not have the best singing voice, and there were a lot of really iconic actresses that played that role on Broadway. So Lucy making the movie, obviously it wouldn't have been made if it hadn't been her and, you know, the star quality she brought to it. Her acting in it is great, but the singing is sort of like, you know, gee, if you had to dub it over Audrey Hepburn and My Fair Lady, you know, maybe you could have dubbed over Lucille Ball in May and had a really good singer.
Do you think
it, but,
that she chose to do that because she knew that that was right for the character at that time? You know, because sometimes, you know, I would think that people know, okay, I'm not the best of this or that, but this is what the character needs, and so I'm going to portray it that way.
It's a good question. I don't know why, you know, whether she felt, you know, that she could handle it or felt like, you know, she wanted to fully have everything about the role. I think there is a certain degree of humiliation of, you know, I think Audrey Hepburn was never thrilled that, because she actually sang originally when they were filming. Somewhere there is actual footage of her singing the songs herself.
Wow.
And so it's sort of a slap in the face to, you know, oh, yeah, your acting is really great, but, yeah, we dubbed in your singing voice. You know,
yeah, thank
else.
You very much.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've done acting and singing. How would you feel about that, especially as a singer?
I think it would be different as a singer. I will tell anybody who's listening that if you want to hire me for an acting job, I will go to an opening of an envelope for you, okay? You probably don't even have to pay me. I will probably do it for free. I did not just say that, and if I can get a good manager, they'll take 10% of that. But I hate acting because I'm terrible at it, and I've learned in the several projects that I've been gifted to be part of, from commercials to indie movies, some TV projects. I'm just not a good actor. I would be a great actor for my own scripted reality, Ryan Seacrest, Kris Jenner production. I would be great at that. And the camera could catch me with my shocked and awe looks and then catch me with my really brilliant one-liners. But I've realized over the years that I'm the best actor of me playing me. I'm not a good actor trying to play the part of somebody else because I can't get into that headspace to do that. Okay, so with that said, as a singer, and I am now just starting to work on my fifth studio album right now, I will also say I am not the world's best singer. I by far, okay? But I've also learned from the first song that I did, which is truly horrible, but it still holds a very special place in my heart. It's called Tell Me Something More. It's the worst song. I mean, my producer is fantastic. He saved the day. Worst song ever. It's because of the singer. And, you know, I joke with everybody that I broke his Melodyne and I broke his auto-tune several times, which is impossible to do because it's a computer program. because my singing was so bad. You know, fast forward, I've got lessons. I can carry a tune. Kind of okay. I'm not great, and I don't claim to be great. I do think, however, that I have changed my mindset of going, I want to sound like George Michael. George Michael sounds like George Michael. Anybody else singing his music is them singing the music trying to sound like George Michael. So I've kind of given up on the, I want to be George Michael, because I'm never going to be George Michael. I'm never going to be Billy Idol. I'm never going to be Brett Michaels. I'm never going to be that. But what I can do a really good job of is being me. Now, the music that I make, I now make because it's music I want to make, because I've given up.
Right.
I shouldn't. But I've given up saying, I'm going to headline Staples Center or the major arena near you and put on a stadium show at this advanced age after I turn 29 next year. Ha, ha, ha. But with that, the music I make, I love. But I do think in my head, I wonder how George would sing this song. Or I wonder how maybe Celine Dion would sing this song. Or I wonder how Whitney Houston would sing this song. Or I wonder how, you know. So I do think how other people would interpret the songs that I sing in their own way. Because the way I would sing a George Michael song is not the way George Michael would sing a George Michael song. George would sing it the way George would sing it. So if he's going to sing somebody else's song, he's going to sing it the way he would sing it. So I think of it kind of like in those terms. So like when I did the Billy Idol song White Wedding and I turned it into Gay Wedding, I love it. And I still listen to it today on my iPad and it comes on. I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember that. That was so much fun. And I tried so hard to be like, you know, sing it like a Billy Idol. And I clearly am not Billy Idol in any way, shape or form, nor will I ever be. But I really had a good time doing that. But getting back
certainly Billy had his own, you know, idiosyncrasies in his song and his voice and all that, but, you know, I wouldn't downplay what you did. I mean, I think yours was, you know, it was you, but I prefer your version to his, actually.
Well, that's because you have excellent taste, Rob. Of course, that's why you prefer mine over his. But you know, I think that, you know, you always start comparing yourself to other artists or other actors or other whatever. And for me, the only thing I can do is what I do as me, and you're either going to like it or not like it, and I have no control over that. But I'm also not doing it to please you anymore. Which sounds really harsh, but that gives me the creative freedom in writing a song or coming up with how I want to perform a song, the license to do it the way it's going to make my heart happy, not the license that, well, you know, if I could do it this way, look 40 years younger and wear tighter pants, we could get a song that could be a top 50 in Tulsa. Well, I just can't do that. It's just not going to be me, so I can't do that, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I get that, because when I write, it's like I was just talking to someone about this. I've got different hats that I wear in a writing project. One is the writer, and I sit down and I just write. And I keep writing until I'm done. And, you know, that I just let it flow out. Then I walk away, come back at least a half hour, if not longer, later, sit down, and then I put on my editor cap. And my editor cap is a bastard. Like, I look at what I wrote as a writer, and I'm ruthless. You know, I go through and rip this out, rip that out, and rearrange this, and da-da-da-da, and, you know, get it like that. Then I'll read it again and fix a few more things. Then I'll read it again. And then when I get to the point where I'm reading it and I'm not fixing anything, I especially like to get to a point where at the end of whatever I've written, I kind of choke up a bit. It gets me emotional. And when that happens, then I'm done. Then it's right.
I love that. Can I tell you okay, so I know this is the radio and that, but can I tell you a secret in front of God and everybody right here? Because you're talking about okay, yeah.
We always do that.
But this is the absolute truth. I've written 60, 70 songs. Of course, you know, there are lots of folks out there that have written tons more. So, you know, this is where I'm at on my journey as a songwriter. So I'm in the studio last week. And in the studio, the process that I usually go through is I go in with what I call a finished song lyrically. And I talk to my producer. We come up with a beat. He, you know, gets out the guitars and we start coming up with the music. I say he comes up with the music. Then at the end of that process, I sing a scratch vocal and then, you know, come home and practice it. And well, this last song that we did, he says, well, what type of song do you want it to be? And I said, well, I'd like it to be like Neil Diamond's Hello or Love on the Rocks. So if you're of a certain generation, which Rob, I know you and I are, you'll know those songs, you know, they're signature Neil Diamond songs. And I said, I'd like to do something that's powerful like that, because to me, oh, I just sing that song today in the car and I just lose it. And he says, okay, so this is a first. So he says, well, what do you want to write the song about? I'm like, I don't know, but let's just make it melancholy. So as he's doing the music, I'm just doing kind of a free flow, writing just thoughts down. And I started writing about my dogs. And so he sends me home with the song, and I come home, and I put Eric in his little puppy carrier, and I have him sitting in the lap, and I've got to do this on Wednesday night because I got to go into the studio on Thursday morning and sing this, you know. And I sit down, and I start writing the song out, you know, taking my thoughts, you know, getting them all formed. You know, as a writer, you do this, Rob, where you – come up with your beginning, your middle, and end, and you edit and edit and edit and edit and edit.
Mm-hmm.
So I get this going. And as I'm playing the music and I've got the song pretty much done, I can't stop bawling. I'm like sobbing, bawling, singing the song with my little Eric. Eric, for those of you who don't know, he's my 5-pound Chihuahua who's 15. And, you know, his days are not going to be, he's seen most of his days. He's got a few left. And for the few that he has, I'm very grateful that he's here with me. But he's in his little puppy carrier. And I am just sobbing. And I thought, well, what is going on with this? Because you've written a lot of songs and you've never had anything wreck you. And all this is a silly little song about your dogs. So I had to put the song away. And I went to sleep, slept horribly, got up the next morning, and about 2.5 hours before I'm due in the studio, I said, I was just completely overreacting. That is the dumbest thing. Garrett, you are so stupid. So I pull up the music, pull up my lyrics, and I can't even get through the first verse without bawling and bawling and bawling. So get to the studio, and I said, Brian, we got to sing the other songs first today, because if we do the puppy song first, I'm going to sound nasally because I'll have been crying. And he goes, what's wrong with you? And I said, I don't know. But we got through everything, and I was able to do like really essentially one take of the song. But even then, you know, Brian was not looking at me because he's adjusting the soundboard and that type of stuff. But I still had like tears coming down my eyes, and I can't believe I got through it. Yeah. I thought, this is just the dumbest thing. So it's funny that you get emotional about your finished product, because I've always wanted to be, you know, I've always wanted to connect to my work in a way like what you've just described. And I didn't think that was something that actually happened to folks.
Oh, yeah. No. In fact, that's when it's right. And when I write that way, and the things that, you know, when I was writing for Huffington Post and all those people, the pieces I write, you know, it's like when in my rewrite, when I choked up and got emotional at the all, I really was work to build that in to the end. Because when somebody finishes something I write, I don't, and it bothers me when I read other pieces where you're reading an article and you're kind of at the end, kind of like, what? Oh, was that the end? Did that finish? You know, it's like, no, it's like I want, at the end of it, I want, you know, you're reading along, I make my last summation point, pulling it all together, and then bop, hits you right in the heart. You know, so it's like, you know, it's sort of like, and the moral of the story, and boom, you know. And
you get them every time.
Well, not every time, but I try.
Well, your odds are good.
No.
So
like I get
where are you writing most for nowadays? I know you write for the LA Blade. And so please do a shameless plug for all the fun stuff that you're actively working on and doing these days.
Well, the LA Blade is where publicly you can see most of my stuff. And it's pretty extensive. I'm writing, you know, a couple articles a month for them. So the weird thing is if you do a Google search and go Rob Watson Los Angeles Blade, you'll go to my author page. If you're on the Blade itself, their search thing doesn't do that very well. But if you find one of my articles and you click on my name in the byline, it takes you to my complete library of everything I've written for them. But like I said, tonight, it's not up yet. But tonight, my piece on Leslie Jordan should go up, and hopefully people will like it. It meant a lot to me writing it, and I went back through interviews he had given, and it's much more in-depth than all of the obit things that are out tonight in all the other publications about, you know, Leslie Jordan, best known for his Instagram videos during the pandemic and his appearances on these shows, and you know, this celebrity said this about him, and you know, I go to much more, peel the onion back a lot further on who he was and what he accomplished in his life. But I also I'm doing something with the LA Blade that is looped to the Rated LGBT radio show, and that is that once I, not every time, but a lot of our podcasts, I do the interview with the person on the podcast, and then I will write up an article from that interview. So it kind of, we go in deep on presenting that, and a lot of those have gone super, super well, and the articles have done very well. That I'm doing a lot of entertainment writing. So LA Blade is the easiest place to find me. A lot of my other writing is more private because I write for different people for their websites, their blogs, their web copy. I just did a case study for an architect, you know, different things like that. So those aren't as easy to find, nor if you found them, would you know that I had even written them. Because they're not bylined.
Well, you have such a different style, probably, you know, writing an entertainment piece versus a technical writing piece. And you have to have a completely different skill set to make that work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sit and I try not to cry at the end of a tech piece. You know, but I do try to make that last paragraph, you know, whatever the subject matter is, have some sort of zing in conclusion to it, because again, even on those, I don't like it to be that meandering, you know, end type thing. But if people really want to find like a lot of my past stuff, if they go onto Google and just put Rob Watson gay dad, because Rob Watson is about as unique a name as Joe Jones, but if you put Rob Watson gay dad, then virtually everything that comes up is either written by me or was written about me. So that's a good way to find a lot of the past stuff. Plus I started writing a fictional book, and
really?
That is,
do tell.
Yeah. That's all I'm telling so far.
Oh, come on.
No.
You've got a great hero by the name of Garrett.
I'll put a hero by the name of Garrett. Okay, fine. My ex will think good. It's about him. So
him, yeah.
It'll be like, you know, no, that's my good friend Garrett Miller, not you.
Yeah, the other one. The other one.
Yeah. So I may build in a blonde Jesus, though. That may be an actual character. We'll have to see about that.
Well, I will tell you that in one of the indie TV shows I was in for, I say two seasons, because I was in the season finale of seasons four. And, but anyhow, long story short, my dear friend Michael Vaccaro, who is a very successful indie actor, and he's got a couple of albums out, just super nice. If you want to talk about a quality individual, he's much like you. You know, his word is his bond. He's just super awesome. But he put me in his show just, you know, because he needed some extras. And that was about the time that the Blonde Jesus character or album came out. And he actually, instead of crediting me as Garrett Miller, he credited me as Blonde Jesus, appearing as Blonde Jesus. Isn't that funny?
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Your alter ego. I mean, there are worse alter egos you could have. So
there's totally worse, because Blonde Jesus is fun.
Yeah, but, that works.
Yeah.
But yeah, our the podcast, though, is going super well. As in addition, just on its own, the guests we've had have been really, I think, fascinating, and I hope people find them that way. But I don't know if you're aware of the whole Ed Buck scandal in L.A.
I have a little bit of a hint about how that all is, you know, tangled up, but do you want to share that with the listeners real quick?
Yeah, it's Ed Buck was a well-to-do political donor, and he gave to a lot of Democratic political causes. Ed Buck also had a methamphetamine habit, and it was actually a pretty dark habit. Because what he liked to do was pick up men, particularly African-American men, and pay them to, you know, be with him, but also he would pay them to allow him to inject them with meth. And, you know, presumably under the auspices of quote unquote have a good time, but on several of the men, he overdosed them and killed them. And it was a huge scandal. And this last week on Rated LGBT Radio, I got to interview the director of a film called, remember the name? Jemal and Tim. It's a documentary, and the director of the film came on, and we had a great hour talking about the case, talking about the film, you know, and his name is Michelle Thomas, and I don't know, it was just a really fascinating, great conversation. The week before that, we had a young man on who does music, and he does a graphic novel, or he's coming out with a graphic novel, really creative young man. And talked to him. And the week before that, I interviewed David Ambrose, who is he's actually an executive at Amazon, but he is gay, and he grew up, I mean, until he was like 11, homeless. His mother was mentally ill, raised him on the street. He went into foster care, really incredibly tough life, young life, and obviously came through it and wrote a book about it. And he's out there now fighting for to get kids off the street and fighting for LGBTQ kids in foster care. So really fascinating stuff. But so those are the people we're talking to.
Yeah, you are always talking to the movers and shakers, and it's whenever I see the post for the show, it's like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, click and listen when I'm able to put you on the car. You have great interviews, great guests, but I think one of the things that I continue to brag about you is that your articles that you're writing are literally seen by millions of eyes, and not the people with like 17 eyes in their head. We're talking like people with normal two eyes in the head. and your articles are hitting millions and millions of people around the world on a daily basis. But your writing is poignant. It has humor. There's compassion. And there was an article that you had recently, I think, I can't even remember that. Here I am trying to promote something that you've written, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was just so fair and objective. I think it was on like Rosie O'Donnell or something like that. It was on Ellen. It was on Ellen, right?
It was on Ellen. I've had the fortune of having Grayson Chance on the show a couple of times. So literally hours talking to him, and he's the young man who became famous by doing a cover of Paparazzi. Then Ellen had him on her show, and Ellen at the time was starting a radio or a music company, so she signed him as her first act, you know, and he was young. He was like 12 years old, and he did a few records, got some success, but then, you know, he was getting older, and his voice was changing, and her record company was not doing well. And so that all fell apart. And she, you know, she was a businesswoman, and she was treating him as a businesswoman would, but she had come off to him like almost like a second mother, you know, getting him involved in all this. And all of a sudden, she just disappeared on him. And so he had this huge sense of abandonment. And he had a recent interview with Rolling Stone magazine where he, you know, came out about all this stuff. And she did not come off well in that article. And anyway, I wrote it from the perspective of both, kind of, you know, the complicated aspect of their relationship, and, you know, kind of presented both sides on it. But, you know, I think his side liked it more than hers did.
Well, you know, there's always three sides to the story. The, you know, your side, my side, and then the truth.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, I think that when you do write an article, though, Rob, you are as a fair writer as I've ever come across. And I'm always excited to see a new story that you have come out. So I'll always say, please do more of that. I cannot believe the hour is up. Next week on Halloween, we will be live. It's going to be a super scary episode because I'm not wearing any makeup, which is perfect for the radio. And my guest host will be Stephanie Girard. So Stephanie's going to be joining us back. Rob, we get you the week of Thanksgiving. So Monday, the week of Thanksgiving, I think it's the week of Thanksgiving. Rob's going to be back with us here on the show. Please listen to him every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, or if it's the other preferred time for Brody, 4-rated LGBT radio. Please do that. We will join you back next Monday night, Halloween. Bring your favorite trick-or-treat candy. Call in with your favorite Halloween story. Stephanie, while she is a psychic, this is my hour to chat with her, not to ask psychic questions. So if you want to call in and tell a Halloween story, that's cool, but we're not trying to get her to put on her psychic helmet for the evening. Rob, any closing thoughts real quick?
Your Halloween song.
You know, we might play the Witch Sisters Halloween. If we're lucky, we'll just see how it all plays out, you know. But anyway, we got about 30 seconds. Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
No, just I love hanging with you. This is how we meet. This is how we, you know, our friendship goes. We do it very publicly. So
and that's grateful a great way to do it. I will and I miss you so much. So I always say this, but I'm very grateful that you indulge me for this hour, because I don't talk on the phone. I don't, you know, I don't write. I don't call. I'm a horrible friend, but yet here you are showing up for me. And I just want to say thank you very, very much. Everybody, we will be back next Monday night with Stephanie Girard. In the meantime, have a fantastic week. Be kind to somebody that you don't know, because you don't have to be. Do it anyway and change somebody's life for the better. You've been listening to RatedGRadio.com. Bye-bye. Yeah, thanks, Rob.